ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Welcome to the Attention Please podcast, now on video. If you like this podcast, kindly like, share, subscribe. You know what to do. So today we will be talking about Kantara. We will not be reviewing it. So spoiler alert, we will not be thinking about spoilers. So please watch this video after you've seen the movie. That would be the best way to watch this video. We're going to talk about some of the themes of Kantara and why we believe it works. So it's not a review. If you want a review, it's a great movie. Just go in and see it. That's it. So today we have with us Radhakrishna, and we connected rather uniquely. So I was tweeting about Kantara, and he responded to me and said, "When are you planning to do a podcast?" And then he let me know that he has some, you know, rather unique perspectives on the movie in terms of the themes. And he wrote an email, and I said, "Okay, why don't we have you on the show?" And you know, you can, but he's not a movie guy or anything. He's an IT person just like me, but who has an opinion on this movie. He's really, really liked it, and it's affected him. I think he wrote in the email that it's affected him. So I just wanted to, you know, talk about this movie with him. So let's start with, for those of you who follow the podcast, I had Dipto Kirti Chaudhary on the podcast a few months ago, I think. And at that point of time, we were discussing why Bollywood. And both me and Dipto Kirti are huge fans of Bollywood. So we were not speaking from a critical point of view so much as we were speaking from a group of people who can no longer find themselves in the movies that are being made. So it was more a perspective of regret than anything else. And we were discussing what was wrong with the Hindi movies that are currently being made. Not just from I don't like them anymore. And one can say, you know what, you don't like them, but a lot of other people like, and that's fine. But the fact that they're also commercially not working, right? This is a commercial industry. In order for us to have movies, they have to work commercially. So otherwise, the movie industry dies, essentially. So it's important for them to work commercially. So one of the things that, you know, we talked about different things. And for me, I think the biggest thing is, Hindi movies nowadays are not really meant for big screen. And by that, what I mean is that previously, when we were growing up, the only way to watch a Hindi movie was you had to go to the theater, or you had to wait for the local cable wala to play it, or you had to wait for the pirated VHS tapes. But now with OTT and people having pretty good televisions and home theaters, there is no good reason to watch a movie in the theater. If the movie is not purely a theatrical performance, I mean, it has to be made for theaters. And most Hindi movies are nowadays, let's take Brahmastra to the side, Brahmastra will say it is for the theaters, but you don't need to go to the theater to see it. Let's talk about Anurag Kashyap's latest movies. You don't need to go to the theater to see it. So why would you do it? You would wait and see it on OTT. That's one thing, even if you like the movie. That's one thing. The second thing, and this basically comes back to Anurag Kashyap and many other movie makers like him, is that the themes that they use are not really familiar. They're not very familiar, or they don't touch the Indian audience. I mean, you look at the last movie that Anurag Kashyap made, I forgot the name, is a copy of, or it's a licensed remake. I'm not saying that it was lifted, but it's a licensed remake of some Danish or some Spanish or something. But first of all, if I want to see it, I'll see the original. Why would I see the remake? And if you're trying to reach out to an audience that doesn't see the Spanish movie, then that theme is not going to appeal to them. So there is no good way out in order for a movie like this to make money. And that's the themes, again, I'll come back to it. Themes are not, they don't touch an Indian audience. And another thing that I think Bollywood doesn't do, for, again, with respect to Brahmastra, if I want to see Avengers, I will go and see Avengers. If I want to see Harry Potter, I'll go and see Harry Potter. I don't want somebody to take a little bit of everything, throw it together and have Ranbir Kapoor. And Ranbir Kapoor doesn't really have that amount of Shah Rukh Khan at his best star quality that I'll, or Salman Khan at his best, that I will just, I don't care what the movie is, it's Bhai Ka picture, I will just go and watch it. So that is, he also doesn't have that quality. So again, why would I watch that movie in a theater? The last thing that I believe that Hindi movies don't do is, and Kantara does, the reason why I'm saying this is Kantara actually does all of this, is it doesn't do world building. It doesn't bother to do world building because it is so anchored in showing the hero and the heroine in the most flattering way possible that virtually it is a showcase for them. So 3 hours of whoever the lead is, that's what the movie is. Everything is built around that person. Nobody cares about, everybody is a prop. Even the human beings are props, really. This Kantara doesn't do that. It spends a lot of time building its world. And it is a spectacularly, it's a spectacular visual extravaganza. And once I saw it on OTT and I regretted not having seen it in the theater. I should have seen it in the theater. It is made for the theater. Even though it doesn't have special effects in the way that you would think, the only special effect that it does when the Varaha appears is actually not that well done. I mean, you could see that it's not a big budget movie. It's very obviously a special effect. It's not a special effects driven movie by any means. It is a very real movie, but it is absolutely made for the screen. It is visually spectacular. The first 15 minutes, if you see the first 15 minutes, you will be hooked by the first 15 minutes. And what it does very well is it does that world building very well, and it goes slow. This is another thing which most Hindi movies, especially in the OTT space, don't get, because they feel that in order to keep the attention of the viewer, you need to always yank it up. You need to yank the speed up, 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 up. Now, when you do that, that means that there is no character development. There is no world building. You are moving from one element of the story to another, one to another. And so you don't feel for anything. This is not that kind of a movie. It actually goes slow. It builds really fast, spends a lot of time building the world. Then at the end, it accelerates. So you need that ebb and flow of any story. As a person who writes books myself, you cannot have things happening every page. That is an Abbas Mastan movie where things happen every frame. And we laugh at them, right? Because that's not the way the world works. So I think it does brilliantly. And it's from a cinematic perspective. In terms of its themes, again, it juggles multiple themes. And you don't have to, you can think about the themes, or you don't have to think about themes. You can take it at a very surface level and enjoy it. But there are multiple themes. One is, of course, the conflict between man and nature. Who is going to take over the forest and the wood that is in it? That is one thing. So this is the government, the private landowner, and the tribals. So there are three parts to the conflict. And then there is the fight between modernity and tradition. There's actually a conversation about fireworks in the movie, which is very politically, it's a very politically charged topic in this day and age, but they have the conversation. This doesn't shy away from controversy. It's not just put in to be there. There's a reason for that. And of course, there is the battle between religion and rationality. So the forest ranger there kind of represents rationality, the rule of law, and the tribals represent tradition and the way of the forest. Caste is a big part of it. Most of us in who watch Hindi movies don't see it usually. We either see it in very art movies, but we don't see it in commercial movies at all. That is usually not a part of commercial movies. And even if it exists as a subtext. Here it is very, very up there. There is a huge deal about people entering people's houses and sitting at a table. This is shown as a sign of rebellion. I'm not trying to spoil it for you, but you'll see it. That entering people's houses, sitting at a table, eating somebody's food. This is a big deal. This is a huge part of the dramatic conflict of the movie. So you see all of these things. And that's the reason why I would see this movie. I'm not going to see these subtexts in a South Korean movie. I'm not going to find this because it's a very different culture. I'll see it. There are great things, but it's not this. this is why you go to watch a movie. So I think it works brilliantly. I would strongly recommend everybody see it. And now I'll turn the floor over to Radhakrishna. So what did you like about the movie and what themes resonated with you?
Yeah, so like you were saying, the subtext of the movie works very well. Even at the surface level, the movie works very well. So, as you said, there is a dispute about the forest. And, it's just a dispute about the forest. There is a good person. There is a bad person. And then, the only twist in the movie is that there is a forest deity who's like involved and who ultimately comes and works as a machina, deus ex machina to come and resolve the dispute. But it works very well, even at the surface level, right? But there is more to the story than what was being shown. One of the themes that I found about halfway through the movie, and there is a scene that happens in the movie where the forest officer ultimately catches Shiva. You know, he's now a fugitive and he catches him in his treehouse and he asks him to come down from his Kailasa. His name is Shiva and he's basically asking him to come down from his Kailasa. So he's basically, just Shiva over there. Now, we have been told that the avatara that is shown in the movie is a Varaha avatara. Varaha avatara basically represents, it represents Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And by the way, he is the Varaha avatara. So the thing is, every pagan culture on this planet, right, it doesn't matter if they are not connected at all. It doesn't matter where on the world they are, whether they are from the opposite polar end of the earth or in India, right? They all have this god who's basically a man of the forest. This happens in all pagan cultures. So the man of the forest in Hinduism is basically Shiva, right? He is this man of the forest is generally accompanied also by a companion animal. So Varaha avatara is accompanied by the boar. Shiva is usually accompanied by the Nandi. And, this Varaha avatara basically becomes Shiva, or he takes over Shiva. So basically signifying that all the gods are the same. That's, that's one of the subtexts that I found very interesting in the movie. There is a lot of allusion to the fact that, all the gods are basically the same. I think several Vedantas speak about this. I think the Advaita Vedanta also speaks about this, that we are all basically just thoughts of a supreme god or something like that. So I found that to be very beautiful, that one particular thing that the movie was trying to say. The second thing that I found to be very nice in the movie was that Shiva originally in the movie is a person who is like, very... he's too headstrong. He's too drunk. He's very obsessed with the materialistic things in the world.
And he's not a very likable person when the movie starts.
Not a very likable person. Yeah,
not a very likable person at all.
Yeah, yeah. There is a very beautiful sequence of events that unfolds during the movie. Now, the thing is, for an avatara to actually possess you, your ego must die. There is a trope that basically in a lot of stories that what happens is your ego must die for the avatara to possess you. And that happens during the movie. So like I said, he does start off as a very egoistic person. He's always drunk. He hunts animals. He's basically destructing the forest. He wrecks the forest that he is supposed to be saving. He doesn't even do the job of Panjorli, during the festival. He doesn't even do that. And
that
he leaves
his cousin.
It to his cousin.
That yeah, his cousin does. Guruva his father does used it. To, but his cousin does.
That, yeah, his father used to. And basically, his entire line of generations, right from the start of the event to the end, they have been doing it, and he doesn't do it. He leaves it to his cousin to do.
And
it.
He's also an alcoholic, right? He basically
He's also an alcoholic.
Alcohol throughout.
Throughout, yes. Throughout, all the time, in any situation.
Except
he
at
needs,
the end. Except at
except
the end.
Except at the end, like, where he says, "I have changed. I have yes. purified." Yes. Yeah. So. The Shiva himself is like, wrecking havoc on the forest. He kills the very animal that is supposed to represent the companion of the Varaha avatara. He is cutting down trees for the zamindar. And, you know, I think at that point, what happens is the forest cannot take him any longer. And it calls out for help. And that happens exactly when, you know, he's halfway through cutting the forest and the tree falls down, and it falls down on the forest officer, you know, almost killing him.
Almost killing him, yes.
I think that's when the forest basically calls for help, because it cannot stand him any longer. And that sequence of events works to destroy his ego, right? Whereas in the beginning of the movie, he's like too strong, nobody can harm him. He can just walk up to the forest officer, say whatever nonsense he wants. You know, after that, he's put in jail, Guruva dies, slowly things work to, you know, sort of bring him down bring him down to earth level. That's what happens. You know, he's humiliated, taken to the jail in front of everyone, photographs taken and all of those things. He suffers that ego death. And at this point, you know, the movie works out that he is out on bail. And that's when he meets Panjorli for the last time. You know, when he's out on, I think he's coming back from the Zamindar's house, you know, on his bike, and he sees Panjorli for the very last time. And that's when he senses that something is about to happen. Right? Even before the last battle takes place, he sort of hesitates going into that last battle. And the reason for that is because I think he knows what is coming to him. And a lot of people actually don't realize this, but he dies during that final battle. Yes. He gets picked up and he gets bashed against the rocks and he dies. That's when Panjorli can basically enter him. And what happens is, you know, he's dead. He has passed away. Panjorli takes over him. Panjorli never leaves him at this point. That's what basically has happened. And, you know, Panjorli ensures that the next generation comes up, that his wife gets pregnant. And, you know, during that very that final sequence we see, right, there is a very beautiful final sequence. The last dance that he does as Panjorli, it's very beautiful. You know, he does these things with the, with fire. And then he calls everybody. He calls the forest officer, the people of his tribe, and he asks them to work together in that very beautiful dance sequence. That was very touching. That literally brought me to my tears. That was a very beautiful part of the movie. And finally, he gets a call back. He gets a call from the forest. You know, that last wow. He hears his father calling him.
Yes.
So, you know, if you recall, he has basically died during that last battle, and Panjorli cannot keep on sticking on to this person. It has ensured that he has passed on, that his wife has become pregnant, that his generation, you know, passes on. And now he must pay that debt to death, essentially, and he needs to disappear. That's basically why he disappears. He doesn't, you know, it is, it's sort of open. A lot of people did not understand why should he disappear. He disappears because he died during that night. That debt must be paid. Basically, that's what happens.
Yes. So my understanding was, of course, very similar. I felt that throughout his life, he dreams of his father, right? He gets haunted by his father, kind of jumps out at different places.
Yeah.
And what he's trying to tell him, and of course, he doesn't understand it, it fills him with fear. I think in my interpretation, he understands that it is death that is that he's seeing there.
Mm.
That thing, which is, he's otherwise not a, he's a very brave person. He's a very arrogant. Mm. It's not that he's brave, but he doesn't care for anything, right? He's very much a living in the moment guy. He's mostly drunk and, you know, he's fighting all the time with anybody. But then the only time when he's contemplative is when he basically sees death. Mm. And at the end, as you said rightly, that he realizes that the forces that are arrayed against him, he can't take it on. He just can't fight his way through, because you know, the zamindar has this, his acolyte is this huge gigantic guy
who
can't defeat. Right? He is usually a guy who believes that the problems can be solved by just fighting. He can just fight his way to the top. That's his physical body, because, you know, he can basically, he's a local gunda, right? He can fight, but he realizes that there's no way he can do it to that guy. That guy is outguns him. So he can't do it. The only way that can happen is for a supernatural. So It's almost inevitable that he has to die. And that's when I think he makes peace with what his father was trying to tell him. That, you know, through his death, which was foretold, he will be able to, you know, fulfill his mission. That's the main thing. So at the end, he does. He gets possessed by the... So there are two sides of nature, which I felt that there is this... Even if I can forgive you, my other side will not. So nature is saying there are two sides of nature, right? One is the kind, nurturing nature, which is the one that asks them to make peace. And then there is the other nature, which is absolutely a force of frenzy, pure frenzy, pure destruction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so it's like mad. It enjoys, and it's so when he does the other dance, which is also another dance, as the vengeful, anyway, is the neck of the guy.
Yeah,
he is basically the nature in its full cruel randomness. He's at that point of time, he's enjoying the destruction. So this is nature, right? We see nature in both forms. We see nature as a nurturing force, and then we see nature in hurricanes and earthquakes and an absolute mercilessness. So we see both. And I think this was very nicely shown, this duality, and the dance, of course. And using dance as a way of conveying it, and using a traditional dance as a way of conveying. And dance is, in a way, drama, right? It is. So that is, again, it comes back to, you know, how I started, is that's so Indian. You are not going to find it anywhere else. You can't see that in a South Korean or in a Nordic movie.
Yes.
You can't find that, right? This is an uniquely Indian experience. And this is what I believe, that moving forward, Indian cinema, not just Hindi cinema, but we have to tap into, in order for us to even financially survive. I'm not talking about aesthetics. You can say, well, I can make a Wanted 2, I can make whatever, Bhulbhulaiya 5, I can keep on making that. But in order for us to survive commercially, we need to tap into the enormous bank of stories and themes that we have traditionally. China does it. Iran does it. Other countries have been doing it for a long time. They don't copy some other movie.
Yeah.
They don't, right? It is only us which kind of been caught in this trap that, and I can say this honestly as somebody who tries to sell. So I have a little bit of an insider's perspective on this. So many years ago, and I've said this story before, I was trying to, I was asked to write a horror story based on basically Big Boss, that kind of a, it's a very strange brief, but I did actually, I did write something and I felt it was quite original. But when I presented that, the person heard this, and this person is a pretty big deal in terms of originality. It's not what you would think. And after hearing, so no, this is a good story, but can we do something like What Lies Beneath? So immediately I felt, well, first of all, I'm not going to adapt What Lies Beneath. Second is, What Lies Beneath has already been adapted in Raaz. And so when I said that, he said, but not in this kind of a context. You can obviously change you could keep the theme, but so why would you do that? Why would you even think on those lines? And I think that Kantara and movies like this basically show that it is possible to have a purely Indian flavor to movies. And that is the only way to make it commercially work in this day and age, where international movies are no longer inaccessible to people. It is actually more accessible. You know, there's so many streaming services. You can see the best movies instantly, almost. So when in the 90s, when we were growing up, yes, we didn't know South Korean movies. I would go to see a movie and think this was original, and then find out many years later that it wasn't. Where I would see the actual sequence where it was lifted from.
Yeah.
We had no way of knowing. In those days, with the information asymmetry, it made sense to do it. Now it doesn't. So again, for everybody, watch Kantara. It is absolutely worth watching. It's an amazing... You should watch it in theaters if you can. Unlike me, I watched it on Amazon OTT, and that too when they had changed the song. I think they've again gone back to the original song at the climax. So I think I saw the worst version of it, by the way, in terms of, you know, at the dissonance between the what was playing in the music and what was being
shown. Yeah.
So maybe I'll rewatch the end. I think it's definitely worth rewatching the end just by itself. Hmm. It's just so amazingly done. So
exactly. Yeah.
So first of all, thanks a lot for Radhakrishna for coming to the podcast. You know, thank you for your perspectives.
Absolute pleasure.
Really enjoyed it.
I just wanted to add, you know, everybody raves about the last 20 minutes. Actually, the first 15 minutes are also excellent because it showcases the evolution of that festival, right? Yes. The original event, I think, takes place in the 1870s. And then in between, there is just the dance. There is just the Panjorli dance. But when we catch up to the hero in the 1980s, I think it happens in the 80s or 90s, it's like a full-blown Kambala festival, you know, with the buffalo racing and everything.
So I think I might have lost you at this point of time. So so thanks for coming to the show. I think we're having some technical difficulties, so I will stop the recording for now. So thank you, everybody, for coming, and I'll see you next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.